I'm actually a little bit emotional right now. Not just because I just got handed an envelope with probably like a $3,000 or $4,000 check in it, but you know, I'm a pretty open person, so I'll just share what's on my heart right now. I spent like the last 10 years working in churches, and many Octobers have come and gone, and that's never happened before. And then I've been here for like a month as the temp, and so I feel very honored. I wish it wouldn't have happened right before I'm about to speak and do all that, because it's not just the gift, but it's kind of reflecting back on that time. And if I'm really honest, I think it's what just happened is really neat, because I think, like I said, some of the emotion is like, oh, this is so nice, but in, you know, after a decade of like, oh, like, why doesn't this ever happen or anything like that? If I'm really honest, I think a lot of times in churches, there isn't much time taken to honor and appreciate one another, and particularly pastors sometimes can go unappreciated. And I'm not asking that so that now everyone sends me a bunch of e-transfers or anything, ryandanielgarrett@gmail.com, but no. But it is kind of nice, since I'm here for a season in between helping you transition, I keep this up when the next person comes, as Josh is here, and even with one another, it's a job, it's a heck of a job, and encouragement like that, I think, goes a long way, at least for me, pull the tears right out of me. So anyways, thanks. I'm kind of shocked, surprised. I was about to go up, and then he said Felix was doing something, and wow, I didn't expect that, so thank you. Whew. All right, dry my eyes. You've probably heard of this thing called the fruit of the Spirit. It's in Galatians chapter 5. If you've been around the church for a bit. If you grew up in the church, you maybe learned it in like a song version to make it easy to remember. And that does make it nice and easy to remember. Thankfully, to songs like that, my 5 and 2-year-old daughters know the fruit of the Spirit, because it's like an easy song that you can teach them and stuff like that. And you've probably heard about this. And in Galatians chapter 5, what happens is Paul's writing, and he writes first about these, like, right before the fruit of the Spirit, he writes about these acts of the flesh. He makes kind of this laundry list of, like, here are a bunch of, like, immoral, unhealthy things that are, like, manifestations of the flesh. It's sin. It's different than what God's created you to live for. And then after that, Paul counters that with what he calls the fruit of the Spirit. And he says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance. They are continually like updating the language and the translations, and they change patience to forbearance. I'm grateful that they're always doing this work. I don't know why that word was an upgrade, but love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such thing there is no law. Galatians 5, 22 and 23, you can read that. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. This is the fruit of the Spirit. It's interesting, the fruit of the Spirit, a lot of times I think we can reflect for ourselves on the good moments in our lives when those fruits are apparent, when that fruit is evident. We're like, oh yeah, like in these moments I'm really loving, or in these moments I exude joy, or in these moments I'm patient or whatever. But none of us in life get accolades for great feats when the feats are very simple, right? It's like none of us watch the Olympics and it's like, oh, the high jump guy just hit like a 2-inch bar. You know, it's like we don't celebrate it when it's simple. And it's the same with the fruit of the Spirit. And most of us aren't going around like, you don't see someone on their birthday party when they're surrounded by friends and family who are being kind to them, and there's cake and there are presents and all these things, and be like, wow, like they're such a joyful person, right? Like that's the easiest moment, right? There are many moments where it's easy to do the good thing or to do the right thing. There are moments when it's like easy to do the noble thing. Some of the easiest moments to do noble things is when you're dating before you're married, right? It's like, there's like, you know, you usually like don't pay attention to the homeless person on the street, but you're walking with your like new girl and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, here's some money, totally, I always give to the homeless, right? It's like you do these things. Oh, volunteering, yeah, totally, I volunteer, I do all the things. You tell, you know, I've heard stories about young adult guys in churches who have been like, yo, I started volunteering in kids' men, or I started attending a Bible study at this church because there's this girl there, and you know, it's like you choose the good things. No one's like, you know, when you're at home and your kids are gone all day and you're just like chilling on the couch, have no responsibilities for that day. No one's like, oh my goodness, they're such a beacon of peace and patience. It's when your kid spills the milk for the 7th time in the morning and you don't lose your cool that it's like, there. We saw patience manifest. And that's really, I think, like what we would identify as the fruit of the Spirit. It's like in the midst of the difficult situations, in the tough moments where it's maybe not so hard, that's when the spiritual act happens. That's when this powerful Spirit of the living God is actually manifesting in the middle of a difficult time. This is what we see in the life of Jesus, right? This is a pretty tough journey for him. Lots of Octobers came and went. I don't think he got, like I said, I don't know, 3-4K for Pastor Appreciation Month. He got quite the opposite from the religious institution of the day. Yet he was so relentless. And what I want to talk to you about, and I think it's on the screens there, is ferocious faithfulness. One of these fruit of the Spirit is this idea of being faithful. Faithfulness. I want to dig into a little bit about what that means, because I think, honestly, I believe that like a consistent expression of these nine fruits is rooted in this idea of faithfulness. We all go through tough moments, right? We all go through hard times. We all go through challenging seasons. And those are the moments where we get to see, am I a faithful person or not? It's not, you know, like they said, when everything's easy, when your boss is just giving you raises and everyone's being nice to you and all that, it's not like, oh, wow, they're so faithful. They're just so consistent. It's when you're showing up and exuding the fruit of the Spirit. And I think if we really dug into faithfulness, it's actually one of the fruit, like one of the parts of this list that brings the rest of it to life. If we could really be faithful to our call to follow Jesus, we'd start to see joy and we'd start to see love and peace and forbearance or patience show up more regularly in our lives. Quick, we're going to hop over to Ephesians 5 in a moment, but a quick point about the fruit of the Spirit and the acts of these flesh, the two lists. Two interesting points, if you want to think about this. The acts of the flesh, it's like all this stuff, like sexual sin and immorality, all this stuff. This big list. At the end of the fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit ends kind of at the period. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. Period. And hopefully an Oxford comma in there, because people who don't use the Oxford comma, in my opinion, you're missing out. Okay. Anyways, there's a period at the end. It's a list of nine things. It ends. It's like, that's the type of grocery list I like. My wife and I have an electronic grocery list. If all of a sudden at the end she said, et cetera, whatever else, I'm like, I have no idea what you mean. I'm at the store fulfilling this list. But that's exactly how the acts of the flesh end. At the end it says, and the like. On our Any List app, if all of a sudden it was like, hey, here are a bunch of items and the like, I'd be like, well, we're getting these things and I don't know what you're talking about. An interesting point about that is that I think what Paul is saying, he's saying, listen, here's this list of like stuff that can take you away from Jesus, things that are not what God created you to live like, and use your imagination to come up with a million more. This is a long list of ways where we can miss the mark with Jesus. Then he has a fairly concise list, nine things, he says. And here, in these nine things, can you find the manifestation of what it means to live in relationship with the God of the Bible? The list ends. There's no et cetera at the end. Imagine that. Love, joy, peace, all these things. As if that list isn't already hard enough. At the end, it's like, et cetera. You're like, oh my goodness, I got to like figure out more things. Nine's quite a few. The other thing that's really interesting, and maybe you've noticed this before. I'd noticed this before, and I kind of just thought, this is a weird, like I'm a grammar nerd. I was like, maybe this is just a weird thing. But when it says the acts of the flesh, it says are. The acts of the flesh are. That's a plural term, right? Like, there are things that when you're talking about plural. The acts of the flesh are this plural list. But when it comes to the fruit of the Spirit, it changes. But the fruit of the Spirit is. And then lists nine things. That sounds grammatically flawed. It's actually, you guys probably know who John Howe is. He's come and spoken here before. He's an amazing pastor here in Vancouver at Reality Church. It was actually, I had kind of just skirted past that. There are many things in the Bible where in my life I've kind of not spent that much time thinking about it. I'm just kind of like, that's weird that there's the word is there, but whatever. I was actually listening to one of his messages where he leans into that. He says, because Paul isn't saying there are nine fruits of the Spirit. He's saying there's one fruit of the Spirit. And that fruit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. So a lot of times when we illustrate, we think about like all these different fruits. We have one on the wall of our house. Actually, my wife made with our daughters. And it's got like a lemon and it's like peace and like, you know, all these things. And it's really cool. But that's what we think about, like these nine different fruits. But really, it's like you take the nine best fruits, like a mango and like a passion fruit and a pineapple and whatever. And you combine nine of them, hybrid them into one. And that's really what this way of the Spirit, this way of Jesus is. It is all of these. It's not, here are some of them. And I think that's a lot of where faithfulness comes in, because many of us, I think, can be like, well, I'm quite patient. but I just kind of lack joy. Or, you know, I'm not good at the self-control thing, but I'm pretty peaceful. And the Bible isn't saying, okay, great, you know, like, you know, you ace some of your classes, so whatever that you failed gym class, you know, it's like, no, these are, this is all part of the same thing. Ephesians 5, there's this great passage in verse 15 to 20 that I'd love to just walk through this morning as we think about this idea of having ferocious faithfulness, faithfulness that never ends, it never gives up, and it just keeps on going. Little recap of Ephesians up to this point. Any of you ever like watch a movie in a series or watch a TV series like a season later and you're like, I have no idea what happened up until this point. You watch those YouTube, my wife and I, we just started season 2 of Loki. I'm pretty bad at remembering anything that happens in movies and shows. But we sat down and I was like, hold up. I have no idea what happened last year when we watched. It was like a short series, like six episodes. I'm like, I have no idea. So we watched like this nice YouTube recap. So here's a little YouTube recap of Ephesians up to this point. Paul starts out with this brilliant prayer, one of my favorite prayers in the Bible, in Ephesians 1, thanking God for the work that he's done, bringing us into, like adopting us into his family and forgiving us of our sins and making us like spiritually whole. Then Paul continues through chapter 2 to like dig into the good news of the gospel, this gospel message that despite our waywardness or brokenness, Jesus offers forgiveness and reconciles us to him. And then after that, immediately after that, and this is something that's missing in the modern church, is like instructions on how to now live like a Jesus-y life, like a righteous, holy, like moral life. It's like now live out the grace, the righteousness that God has filled you with. And so there are all these instructions, all these kind of details, some really specific situations. Some of it you read and you're like, too specific to not have happened kind of thing. And then you get to Ephesians 5, verse 15. And this is, I think, just this part where Paul brings us together in such a cool way. Verse 15, he says, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Be very careful then how you live. So because of all this, because God has rescued you from your sinfulness and your waywardness, because of that, and now live in all these righteous ways, and at the end of this, he says, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. This language of unwise and wise, a lot of times when we think about that, we often, kind of in our culture, we quite wise and unwise, maybe in different ways, but maybe sometimes like academically or like you've got these things to say or whatever. The Greek language here, really what unwise and wise means is like is kind of a comparison between being like an expert or an amateur in something. So wise would be like you're an expert, you're a professional. So Paul says live as a professional of the gospel. Live as an expert follower of Jesus. Live as like a very advanced like level 9,000 wizard version of what it means to follow Jesus. Not as unwise, not as an amateur, not as a beginner. If you've read Hebrews, Hebrews 5 kind of talks about something like this. The author talks about like how many people who have been part of church or following Jesus or this religion for a long time are still like drinking milk like little babies, kind of this spiritual milk. And there's this idea that it's like, you know, people might enter into this like belief system drinking milk like a baby and be on a diet of milk for the rest of their life. Imagine that. Imagine you're born and you start drinking milk and then like 30 years later, you show up to someone's house, like, you want some food? No, just milk. I'm good. I mean, probably have some serious lactose issues. Am I right? But like, it's just like, no, it's it. It's like you haven't experienced steak, lobster for the vegans in the room, tofu made just right. It's like, you haven't experienced this? Dig in. Dig into the spiritual banquet of what's going on here. Don't live like a two-year-old. I mean, my two-year-old, like half of my job is just trying to get her to turn her head to like look the direction that she's walking and running, right? And it's just like, yeah. Many of us live our Christian spirituality like that. It's like, well, Jesus is awesome. Poof, and crashing into stuff. And we are not being very careful how we live. We live as unwise. We live as amateurs, beginners. It's like we hop into this idea of Jesus or church or whatever, and we just stay there. No growth, no development. Paul says, live as experts. We don't like to talk like that. Oh, I'm an expert Christian. You should be an expert Christian. You've been part of this thing for decades. What does it take to be an expert? Lots of people go to university for 4 years, write a book, and all of a sudden they're an expert. It's like if we've been part of this thing for decades, we've been part of this thing for a long time, we should be experts. We should be professional Christians. We should be advanced in our devotion, in our faithfulness of what it means to follow Jesus. He says, do this by making the most of every opportunity. That's really what life is, a series of moments and opportunities. Oh man, we're good at getting together on Sunday mornings and singing the songs and doing the things, right? But what about Monday? What about Monday? What about Tuesday? Are you making the most of every opportunity? Are you, you know, a lot of people, they talk about that thing. They're like on their deathbed and they're like, oh, I wish I would have like made more use of my time. Like that is what life is a series of moments that are fleeting. And Jesus lived with the intentionality, a sinless life of making the most of every opportunity. Live as wise people who make the most of every opportunity. That's what faithfulness is. We have this conflicting view, I think, often. I struggle with this a lot. Where, like, my faithfulness is on when I'm working at the church. My faithfulness is on when I'm visiting a home church. My faithfulness is on in certain situations. But then I go on vacation and I take holidays from my relationship with Jesus too. Oh, why would I be open to sharing my faith with someone beside me on the airplane? I just want to watch my shows. Why would I do this? Why would I live, like, this is me time. This is my time. As a follower of Jesus, Jesus would say, actually, all of it's my time, because you've surrendered that back to me. Now make the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. It's interesting. I think if we read that statement, not knowing it's in the Bible, we would be like, yeah, someone's writing that today in 2023, because the days are evil today. I got some news for you. We always think, like, I think it's easy for us to always think like, oh, you know, 2023, this is the worst time in history. It's always the worst time in history. It's all bad. Even as we're gonna get to the Sermon on the Mount. We're gonna start in November. We're gonna start a series of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus, I don't want to like steal too much of my own thunder now, or maybe I'll give these weeks to Josh so that I can steal these from him. But Jesus in Matthew 6, he talks about praying, fasting, and giving to the needy, and he talks about this way in which we do those three sinfully. I'm like, I'm sinning while I'm giving to the needy. I'm sinning while I'm fasting and praying. What's wrong with me? Like, how jacked up am I? We bring this evil and bleakness into the world, and God is in the process of removing that from us and saying, faithfully follow me. But we live in a world where there's so much brokenness. In 2023, we just have more opportunity to watch it on live streams, to watch the bombing and the killing and stuff like that. But that's been the story of this world for a long time, a complete rejection of God, and the days are evil. So here's the warning. The days are evil, so make the most of every opportunity. The days, the evil will continue and continue and continue. And the only opportunity we as a church have to interact it is to make the most of every, not just some, every opportunity. This is like total like maximizer talk. I like to consider myself to be a bit of a passionate, maybe obsessive maximizer. It's like if the schedule's too open and we can't get enough in, I'm like, okay, we got to get more in. We got to do this. Oh, like I have so much FOMO. I live my life with this fear of like missing out on opportunities. This is probably most manifest, my desire to maximize. This is probably most manifest when I go to a buffet. I go to a buffet and I judgmentally watch people who put salad on their plate, right? It's like, bro, like you're paying all you can eat and you're wasting a, like, space. And you're like, so this caused some tension between me and my wife when we first were together, because we'd go to a buffet and she put like salad or like mashed potatoes on her plate and stuff. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was like, we've got a bunch of like that lettuce and tomato stuff like going bad at our fridge, in our fridge at home. I'm not eating it there. Why would you waste it? Why would you waste it here? There's ginger beef, there's pizza. You go to one in the US, they cook a steak right in front of you and you're gonna waste it on lettuce. Anyways, maybe that's ridiculous, and maybe I would live longer if I ate some of the salad. You got a short life to live faithfully. Make the most of every opportunity. Whenever you're reading the Bible, you can assume that there's kind of a point to what you're reading. There's usually like a central point, like when you're reading something. A lot of times, sometimes I think we just like to pick a nice verse here and there and think it's a series. Now, if you're reading Psalm or Proverbs, Psalm's a little bit Proverbs. It is a little bit more like pithy statement after pithy statement in some sections. But most parts of the Bible, there's kind of a central idea. I would argue that verse 17 is kind of the central idea of the movement that Paul is up to here. He says, therefore, because of all of this, therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Remember that wise and unwise talk? Wise meant like live as an expert, someone who's advanced, a professional. And unwise is like, you know, don't be an amateur, don't be like a beginner at this. This foolish word is actually a little bit different. It basically means stupid. Like your head is empty. You don't have a brain inside your head. That's kind of the original intention of this language. So Paul says, don't be stupid, but understand what the Lord's will is. Notice that contrast there. We can, as humans, we are quite smart in a lot of ways. We've figured out a lot more technologically than any other species on the planet. But the premise of the Bible is that without God's wisdom, without God's will in our lives, it is like foolishness. It is like having an empty head. We're going to come back to that verse because I think that's central and we'll end there. Paul goes on, he says, do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. We love verses like this that say words like debauchery because since we don't really know what it means, we can just kind of go past it and be like, I don't think I debauch. I haven't debauched this week. It's been a month free. Like, you got a counter at home. It's like 9 days debauch free. You know, it's like, I haven't debauched. When's the last time you've been home church and we were like going around, someone's like, hey, you know, I've just really noticed some debauchery in your life. Never heard it. I've heard a lot of crazy things in the church. Never that. So a lot that could be said. I don't know why they're updating patience to forbearance and not changing debauchery to a word that we can understand a little bit better. Anyways, debauchery. It's this idea of, ultimately, I mean, there's a lot that we could say, but simply put, it's like this idea of being consumed with something other than what Jesus is, being intoxicated with things of the world. A lot of the times there's a connotation to, like, you know, intoxicating substances like drunkenness and stuff like that. But really, it's just like you can get wrapped up in anything. You can find your identity and purpose in a lot of things, in your job, in your relationships, sometimes in good things, family. Oh, man, you can be intoxicated by your family going well, by people liking you, relationships, by having the schedule you want, by having the job you want, by making enough, having this thing, having that. You can be intoxicated by good, bad, and neutral things. But there's only one spirit that you can be filled with. And Paul says, rather than being consumed with, kind of like in Galatians 5, rather than being consumed with anything else, simply draw back and allow the Spirit of the living God to be that which consumes you and fuels you. Oh, that's tough. I live a very conflicted life. I want to debauch every single day. I want to find my meaning and identity and purpose in what people think of me and how things are going. I want my life to look like other people's lives. I want to enjoy the same things. And Jesus says, there's something so much better for you. Be filled with the Spirit. Verse 19. This is kind of the result, but it's kind of weird. Speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. Sing and make music from your heart to the Lord. Always giving thanks to God the Father for everything in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. That's a little weird, right? It's like you come into Pilgrim one day and someone's like, the Lord is my shepherd. Nice to see you, by the way. You know, it's like how they greet you. Sorry, I'm a bad singer. But it's like, who greets with psalms and songs and stuff like that? Actually, I'll be honest, this is my second time preaching from this text. And the first time I did, I hadn't been, you know, I was kind of thinking about this, like, speaking to one another with psalms and hymns and all that. It's kind of weird. But before the service, this lady came up to me. I was guest speaking at this place. I didn't know anybody there. And she just said, hey, can I pray for you? I was like, yeah. And it was kind of interesting how weird I felt like that was. Not weird and like, oh, you're weird, don't pray for me, but just like, no one does that. You know, it's not really a common thing. We love our small talk. We love our sports. We love our politics. We love the things that are easy go-to topics where we can find that. It's a little uncomfortable, I think, sometimes to try to like turn the topic to something like kind of deeply like spiritual, right? It's hard to do that. Take some intentionality to say, you know what, I want to incorporate Jesus into my conversations. I want prayers. I want psalms. I want kind of words of who God is to be part of that. So the idea of being very careful how you live, I think, points to intentionality. We all know that without intentionality in our life, life just goes off track, you know. Without intentionality with how we eat and how we sleep and how we manage ourselves and our finances and our kids and all the things in life, how we manage our time, just doesn't go well. I worked at one church where I discovered that kind of their working definition of discipleship was any time that people who claimed to be Christians were in proximity to each other. Now, it's good for people who are claiming to follow Jesus to be around each other. But discipleship actually comes out of something, I think, more intentional. It's like we're not just going to be in the same room, but we're actually going to like try to spur one another on. We're actually going to try to encourage one another. We're going to try to, I guess, speak to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs. I'm not saying you can never talk about how the Canucks still will continue to never win the Stanley Cup again. You know, like, I'm not saying you're not allowed to talk about that. I'm not saying we can't talk about politics or the weather, whatever it is. You talk about that stuff. But why is it that we can go Sunday in and Sunday out, week in and week out, surrounded by Jesus followers, non-Jesus followers, and look back and assess our conversation and say very little of it was intentionally captured by this spirit that's supposed to be bringing fruit out of me? Why so little? I don't know. It's kind of awkward in our world, right? The small talk's normal. Fortunately, Jesus doesn't call us to be normal. Always giving thanks to God the Father for everything in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. I mean, I could talk for hours about how ungrateful we are. We're the richest people that have ever lived, and we're probably some of the most ungrateful and selfish people that have ever lived. I don't just mean Pilgrim, I mean Western Canadians. We just have so much. We're like, inflation is crazy, and there's like, and still yet we somehow survive. Most people on the planet and throughout history would never be able to survive, you know? It's like, and here we are, we have so much, so much, yet we're very ungrateful. So, TLDR, Paul says, be careful how you live. Not as unwise, but as wise. Faithfully making the most of every opportunity. Don't be filled with the things of the world, but instead intentionally fill your conversations with one another with these murmurs or these ideas or these concepts about your faith and Jesus and spirituality so that you will be filled with gratitude and always live out of that. And right in the middle of it, verse 17, we're going to end on this verse. Therefore, don't be foolish, don't be empty-headed, but understand what the Lord's will is. This is foundational, I think, to everything in the Bible. And I will always talk about this, and I'm going to share some of the same ideas and analogies around this till you guys get sick of it, so when I leave, you'll just be like, oh, thank goodness Ryan's not banging that same gong anymore. I talk about when I leave as though I'm not going to be here forever, and maybe that makes some of you uncomfortable, but I want to let you know that every pastor in every church ever is an interim or transitional pastor. It just depends how long, but no one's around forever. I'm always going to talk about this. We live in a church age where we claim to know what God's will is, but spend very little time listening to Him. When I spend less time listening to my partner, Talisi, by the way, I'm impressed by the gift, but what I was more impressed was when Felix was praying for me, my family's full of weird names besides Ryan, and he nailed all of them in the prayer. That was incredible. But if I just go home and I tell Talisi to shut up and I never listen to her, how would I ever know what her will is? This is the age of the church that we're living in. As we've got this moralistic idea, our own kind of westernized version of Christianity where we've decided this is the set of rules I live by, and we don't really need to hear the voice of God anymore. The reason I will always continue to preach texts rather than topics, by and large, is because more than you being like, oh, Ryan said that thing, I want to go and do that thing, is I hope to spark some imagination and some wonder about what the voice of God can do in our lives. How on earth can we know the will of God if we're never listening to this thing? Hundreds of years ago, you might not know this, but maybe I've shared this here, I don't know, I like to talk about this. Hundreds of years ago, the Bible was chained to the pulpit or lectern or whatever you want to call it in churches. It was chained there. No one had a copy. People didn't have it on their phone hundreds of years ago. They didn't have copies or anything. That was just there. So you'd have to go to the building. You'd have to hear it. There's some people that gave their lives to have this thing unchained so that we could have it. They literally died for you. You don't even know their names, but they died for you so you could have this thing. But I think my generation, we've brought it back and we're like, no, it's good. Right there. Let's chain it back. Let's go hear the spiritual leftovers on Sundays. There's this imagination I have of a church age where we're so deeply invested in the voice of God that we can understand what His will is. And because of that, not because of anything we do, but because of that, we can faithfully make the most of every opportunity. We can faithfully live as wise, not as unwise. We can stop being foolish, but understand the will of God. And as a result, because God's voice is invested in us, there are murmurs of that voice that spread out as we speak to one another with psalms and hymns and encouragements of who Jesus is. And we're always expressing gratitude because the voice of Jesus is a good voice with so much to be thankful for. I don't know where you're at in this journey, and as I talk about that all the time, maybe you're someone who faithfully picks this up and reads that. Man, I want to encourage you to keep going. Maybe you hear that as condemnation because you're like, I'm the person that, like, don't ask people to put their hands up, like, who's read the Bible recently or anything like that. It's nothing like that. It's a loving encouragement to say, this thing will change your life. I don't know why. I don't even know how in some ways, but it just will. The voice of the Spirit that brings out love, joy, peace, forbearance, all those things faithfully speaks into your life, and as you allow God's voice to reign in your life, faithfulness sparks out. We're going to hop into a time of communion now, and